Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. The history of the world is but the biography of great men, wrote Thomas Carlyle in the 19th century. Joshua Wolf Schenck is not having it. He argues that the myth of the lone genius neglects and obscures the primary creative unit that has moved us forward, pairs.
Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. I get high with a little help.
Marie and Paul Curie, Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld, Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs, Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg, and the duo behind this song, John Lennon and Paul McCartney, are among the imaginative couplings covered in Powers of Two, finding the essence of innovation in creative pairs. Schenck uses their stories to explore what he calls the electrified space of creative partnerships and the essential ingredients in creative pairings that have produced the most imaginative, world-changing ideas and works. Joshua Wolf Schenck, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
That song, I Get By With a Little Help From My Friends, it's thematic, of course, for what we're talking about, but also reveals a lot about how John Lennon and Paul McCartney worked together. How did this song come about?
It does reveal a lot. They had a lot of space from each other at this time. They lived about an hour away from each other, starting in the mid-1960s. John was in the stockbroker belt about an hour outside of London, and Paul was right in the thick of London. And John was spending a lot of his time tripping on acid and reading mystical texts, and Paul was hobnobbing around London with the best and the brightest. But they met most afternoons around 2 o'clock, and this particular afternoon they were down at Paul's place and started at 2 o'clock and banged around on the piano and with guitars and just ambled their way through the whole afternoon. It was about 7 o'clock when they decided to head to the studio. They wrote maybe 4 or 5 lines in that time, and you see them playing off each other and delighting in each other and challenging each other, and also just being in this totally safe and open environment out of which the song emerged, that is a song so much about connection and friendship.
Yeah, it's so interesting because you portray them in the book as very opposite, that John is disorganized and kind of ambling around, always has to have somebody nearby in the studio with him, whereas Paul kind of sits quietly chirping away and writing in his neat handwriting. They're almost
right.
Like opposites.
Every pair has this kind of dialectical, you know, opposition, and you see people who are almost like from a different species. They're so strangely matched, and yet there's also always an undercurrent of profound similarity, and that might sound like a truism because everyone is like another person and also very much dislike them. But you see in great creative pairs, these two things happen to extreme degrees. And the oppositions are really essential because that's what allows people to find their niches. That's what allows people to expand the other's mind. It also then leads to a kind of undercurrent of tension, which is there from the beginning, where you're not going to be perfectly comfortable with someone with whom you're creating. And a lot of times it's the opposite of comfort. There's just it's almost like getting an electric shock. When Larry Page and Sergey Brin first met, they would go on to found Google together. They met at graduate school in Stanford, and they immediately broke into an argument, and they argued all afternoon. And a journalist described them as like two swords sharpening each other, which I think is a beautiful image for so many of the pairs.
Well, that tension, that distance really served the collaboration between the great choreographer George Balanchine and his longtime, what shall I call her, obscure object of desire, the ballerina Suzanne Farrell. What was going on there?
Well, yes. And, you know, it edged into eroticism, which is often the case, too. And we think, oh, well, you're talking about sex. But eroticism and sex are two very different things, even though we associate them together. Eroticism is this intense physical but also spiritual yearning to be near someone, to be drawn to him or her. And it often is an element of creativity, and it can run underneath a lot of great work. It also can get tricky, as it did for George Balanchine and Suzanne Farrell. He longed for her in ways that went beyond their work, and she, as a much younger woman, stood up to him and said, no, our relationship is about work, and I'm not going to give you what you think you want, which is to have sex with me, because what we both really want is to do this work. And it is a great drama. It really is, like many of the stories in this book, almost, you know, these sort of archetypal myths of conflict and struggle and the achievement of great beauty, but alongside a lot of tenderness and difficulty.
And it wasn't what it seemed. Suzanne Farrell said that the relationship was never consummated sexually. But we may have this assumption of Balanchine in charge of his teenage dancer. Tell us about the kind of bonds that you found inside of these creative pairings. And, you know, who was in charge, or was, did somebody right. have to be?
That's a great question. You know, power dynamics and power struggle is a big part of creating. And you do often see a dynamic like Suzanne Farrell and George Balanchine, where he is clearly the boss. It was his company. And yet, by letting this woman into his life and into his heart, by turning to her for her interpretive choices, he became dependent on her. It's often the case when we see someone in the spotlight, we see Valentino, the great designer. Mm-hmm. We don't know that he's actually being directed by someone who is off stage and unseen.
I love the quote from Valentino of his creative partner, Giancarlo Giametti. He says, living all of his life next to me, he accepted the role that was reducing. But there's a saying, when two men ride in the same horse, one has to be in the back.
It's a great quote, and it's these stories are fascinating psychologically, because Valentino does seem to really believe that he is certainly that he is primary, and on some level that he is doing it alone. And one of the things that Giancarlo does for him is sustain that illusion, and that is often the case, you know, with these hidden partners. But it really gets problematic when they are written out of history, which is so often the case. You know,
well,
we know about.
That's my question. Yeah. I mean, there's a suggestion here that we need another. You know, someone, as Albert Einstein said of Michel Besso, to be a sounding board, a mirror. But should we be minting new Susan B. Anthony dollars with Elizabeth Cady Stanton's profile on there too? Should we revise our thinking about who gets credit?
I mean, that you've just cited one of the most outrageous examples of how credit goes to a singular person. And we see it all the time when the MacArthur Foundation announces its fellowships in academia, when someone is up for tenure and they have to demonstrate a singular original contribution and create this fantasy, this fiction that they've done it shorn of intense entwined collaboration, which is almost always the case in the sciences. What we see all through history are these enmeshed relationships. It's not the lone genius, and it's also not the kind of hive mind and, you know, we're all just, you know, in a big group kind of making each other smarter. It is passionate, aroused, electric relationships that have all the dimensions, you know, of our great romances and our great friendships, and they're dramatic and they're heartbreaking, and that is where creativity happens, with relationships.
Chemistry and tension and distance and confluence, some of the elements of great creative partnerships, at least as described by our guest, Joshua Wolf Schenck. He's author of the book Powers of Two. Another element, Joshua, romance, because indeed some of the creative pairs you cover are couples. Artists Christo and Jean-Claude, Maria Abramovich and Ule, Marie and Pierre Curie, who would not be known for discovering plutonium and radium if they had followed their own paths. So what was the advantage there of joining together?
There's a great love story. And Pierre was a loner. He was living with his parents in his mid-30s when he met this young upstart, this brash Polish woman who was fiercely independent and had her heart broken. She also had a lot to prove as a woman scientist, and she really wanted nothing to do with him, but he pursued her and he beseeched her not just to join him as a wife, but to join him as a partner and to set aside her separate interests. She was a nationalist and very political and insisted on returning to Poland. And he said, no, you and I can do something very beautiful together. And in his mind, the science and the love for her person were really totally entwined. And that's how their career unfolded. They got married. They began to do their research. And it was actually quite separate to begin with. But then when she got on this thread that led her to discover radioactivity, he abandoned his independent research and became joined with hers. And they began to write in journals with entwined hands. And everything was first person plural from then. It was all we. There was no I.
Hmm.
One thing to pay attention to in our own lives, that moment when you talk about something as being ours, and it may not feel unambiguous. It may feel like, well, I'm actually not sure if this is mine or ours or yours. But if you find yourself in that space of not knowing, that's a great sign that you're beginning to truly partner with somebody.
That sounds like a great give and take, a great relationship. But some of the relationships you're writing about are not particularly good relationships.
Yes, well, we have to redefine good around creativity. Good relationships for innovation and making new and beautiful things is when the work is outstanding. You may have two people who quite dislike each other, like Penn and Teller. They had a great deal of respect for each other, but they also had a kind of cold, clinical relationship, and they did fight a lot. John Lennon and Paul McCartney also had a great deal of tension and competition, and might go from being best mates to being in a kind of tug of war, as their producer said. But all those varieties of emotional experience, you know, fueled the work that they did. And these relationships are really critical. And I think they also really help us see friendships and romantic relationships in a new light, because a lot of times what's most satisfying in these relationships is what we do with one another, not just how we make each other feel.
Well, Josh, why then does it persist, this kind of myth of the lone genius? Why do we gravitate toward that?
Creativity is ethereal. It's mysterious. We're trying to tell a story about it. And the lone genius makes for a very clear, simple story. You know, it meshes with the hero's journey, and we can really track it. It also functions very neatly in a market economy. You know, who owns it? That person owns it. But it's just gone way, way too far. And we need to bring relationships out of the shadows and into the center. And as we do, we need to recognize that there's a great deal of ambiguity and complexity. And anyone who has been in an intense, intimate relationship, whether it's romantic or creative, knows that it's something intensely private. No third person is going to fully understand what happens between you. And a lot of times people say, okay, well, I'm not even going to try to understand what happened between George Lucas and Marcia Lucas. I'm just going to say that George Lucas was the great lone genius. And that's not true. And it's really, really harmful for people who are trying to make work themselves if they hold themselves up to these just inane standards that are never the case when we look at the people we admire and how they did what they do.
Well, Josh Schenk, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
A crowd of people turned away, but I just have to look, having read.
Joshua Wolf Schenk is author of Lincoln's Melancholy and now Powers of Two, Finding the Essence of Innovation in Creative Pairs. You can find more on the book, including a link to an article he wrote on the Lennon-McCartney Creative Partnership for The Atlantic. That's on our website, wordofmouthradio.org. And we would love to hear from you. What are some of the greatest creative collaborations of all times? Think Patti Smith and Robert Mapplethorpe, Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera. Tell us what we missed on our Facebook page, facebook.com/wordofmouthradio.
Woke up, fell out of bed, dragged a comb across my head.
For anyone who's ever blinked in a photo or just made a really weird face, help is on the way. Up next, we're going to hear about Auto Awesome. It's a new Google feature that combines the best of disparate photos into one perfectly gorgeous and completely fabricated moment. That's when Word of Mouth continues.
Way upstairs and had a smoke, and somebody spoke, and I went into a dream.